is the 18th of April. Oh my goodness, week 11 is almost over, and we're continuing with bonds. We'll finish up chapter 9 and then get started on the calculations for bonds in chapter 10. We sold Canopy Growth Corporation. Where's Carlos? He's not here. And it turns around and it jumps 8% since we bought and sold it. And we bought Mountain, which is very interesting. And as I said, I was saying that I want to go to the Point Loma Library because I know they have the small cap and mid cap value line and take a look at it. But on Tuesday, we decided to buy that. And we saw that their dividend growth has been very substantial. So this is the kind of company that it's mid cap, $8 billion or so, which is relatively small by today's standards. This is the kind of company that can become a 5-bagger or 10-bagger that when you read one up on Wall Street, that's what Peter Lynch was looking for. He was looking for companies that could explode, could get a whole lot larger, and it's the kind of company that can. I don't know that it will. I don't know enough about it yet. We haven't done any good research, but they're going to be very cyclical. In the next recession, because of this recreation and the like, they're going to get hit pretty hard, but that's okay. We'll buy more. So that's the kind of company. But at the same time, do you really think it's going to have the promise of a Netflix or an Amazon or a Farth? I don't know. We'll see. Because obviously leisure is becoming more and more popular. So here's Yang. Pass it to Yang, please. Jennifer, I think I have yours. Okay, so let's get started on, or let's get continuing on chapter 9. We had gone through bonds and taken a look at their characteristics. We looked at a few advertisements, bond solicitations, and we also saw, didn't we go through Ford and then Poway, right? How they had done, the price, they had plummeted, and the best time to buy was when everybody was worried, frightened, but at the same time, that's also when people don't want to buy. So it's you have to deal with your emotions. So now we're going to go from the least riskiest bonds, and we had done a few, and we'll burn through those quickly, the treasuries, all the way up to the most riskiest. But first, we need a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? Anybody have a good joke? I told you the bond joke, right? The difference between a bond and a man? I didn't tell you that. Okay, what's the difference between a bond and a man? The bond eventually matures. Okay. So I'm bonds are kind of boring, so when you have something that's kind of a joke for a bond, we're excited about it. So Yang is here, Jennifer is here. Okay, anyone else sneak in? Okay, good. All right, so we had looked at treasuries and we found that even though they now, from S&P, Standard & Poor's, have a AA-, Mr. Warren Buffett, who I trust a whole lot more, says they should be quadruple A, which doesn't exist. And we took a look at the TIPS, which are becoming, or were, very popular right after the Great Recession because the Federal Reserve Bank had flooded the market with reserves, cash, into the banking system, and then people said, oh, it's going to be like Zaire, it's going to be like the Congo, like Zimbabwe, we're going to have hyperinflation, quick, buy TIPS. Where the economists were saying, no, you don't understand, the demand is gone, we are fighting deflation, not inflation. And of course, those are just academics, liberals, who work at a college, and they were right, of course, because that's what economics... You know what economics is called, don't you? You know the name for it? The dismal science. And it lives down to its name. But still, there are some things that are true that have been shown over and over again. So if you're worried about inflation, and inflation's going to creep up, we do know that. We know that it's not going away. But if you're really worried about inflation, you would like TIPS, Treasury Inflation Index Obligations. And again, you can buy them, same price the big boys and girls on Wall Street get at where? Where can you buy them? Chapter 1. What was the chapter 1 assignment? TreasuryDirect.gov. Come on, don't forget. TreasuryDirect.gov. Okay, cool. And now, mortgage-backed bonds. So here are bonds that are backed by assets. This is where we stop, right? Does that remember? This is where we stopped. Does that remember? Okay. Mortgage-backed bonds, sometimes called asset-backed bonds. What's going on here? Well, if you go to a bank and you have some kind of collateral, a home, a car, or you give them some cash and put it into a secured savings account, they will give you a better deal, right? They're going to give you a better interest rate than if it's an unsecured loan. And so mortgage-backed bonds are that same kind of idea. There's something behind the bond, other than the full faith and credit of the ability of the entity to pay the interest rates. There are mortgages, or there are railroad cars, or there are planes. And these guys became really, really popular because what did the industry do? They took 1,000 mortgages from people all around the country or wherever, and they pooled them all together and then turned them into bonds and said, here you are, investors. Here are bonds that are backed by those mortgages. And people tend to pay their mortgages, right, most of the time. And so they became an entire industry, pass-through securities, participation certificates, collateralized mortgage obligations, collateralized debt obligations, CMOs, CDOs, mortgage-backed securities. And the monthly payment consisted of interest and principal. And this is not a trivial situation, folks. This is not a trivial entity. Because have you heard of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? Maybe you heard of Ginnie Mae, but Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. These guys are corporations, and they were spun off, sponsored by the United States Congress. And the idea was, we want to make it easier for people to buy homes. So we're going to create these entities, and they are going to pool those mortgages together. So you go to Mission Federal Credit Union, or you go to Chase Bank. Now, Chase, sometimes they hold on to their mortgages, but usually credit unions don't. Not anymore. They used to. That was called a savings and loan. Have you heard of a savings and loan? They disappeared 30 years ago. They disappeared for various reasons. But those entities, they held on to their mortgages and they collected the savings, the interest. I'm saying they collected the interest, and that's how they made their money. Well, now you go to a credit union, they sell you a loan. They don't hold on to them. They do not hold on to that loan. Excuse me. They turn around and they sell it to Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. And they're responsible for some 70% of the home loan funding. So you think you're dealing with Mission Federal, and you are, but all they do is they turn around and send the payments that you give them to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And then they sell those bonds all around the world to people who are, you know, investors, and then they get their interest and their principal. Make sense? What could go wrong? Okay. Some of you are pretty young, but about 12, 15 years ago, housing prices on the left and the right coast started to levitate. California, New York, Chicago somewhat. In the middle of the country, not so much. The flyover states, as they're called. And do you remember the housing bubble? It wasn't that long ago, was it? No problem! But I can't afford these payments. Oh, don't worry about it. We're going to give you a $500,000 loan, and all you got to pay is $1,600. You normally have to pay $3,200. What's the catch? That's only for 1 year. Have you heard about these things? The optional, what? Interest. Some of them just charged interest only. Some of them didn't even charge enough to pay the interest. And these were called optional adjustable rate mortgages. Yes. The ARM options, right. The optional option, they just call them option ARMs. Adjustable rate mortgages, optional payments. So you don't have to pay the whole payment the first year. The next year, it goes from $1,600 to $2,100, $2,000. The year after that, it goes to $2,500. And then the fourth year, it goes to $3,200. And people were saying, but Ms. Mortgage Broker, I can't make those payments at $3,000. No problem! In 3 years, that $500,000 house is not going to be worth $900,000, right? 3 years ago, it was only worth $250,000. This is what was going on. Housing prices were just levitating. And so the industry was just agog. And they were giving these people, they were giving these things to people without any documentation about their earnings. They were making $35,000, $40,000 a year. They should have been making $100,000 a year. And they were packaging these things up, selling them all around the world, and saying they're triple A, the same as the Treasury. And then, of course, we know what happened. The whole thing collapsed. But the truth is, folks, these things have a purpose in our economy. The problem was the regulators were asleep at the wheel. The industry was just saying, no problem. People like me were jumping up and down, screaming and hollering, those liberals, those college professors, those economists were saying, this is going to end badly. And I knew it was going to end badly, but my buddy was far more pessimistic. I was saying, yeah, we're going to drop about 20, 25% in the housing market. He said, no, it's going to fall 50%. I said, Jim, you got to go back to the Great Recession, Great Depression, this is before the Great Recession. You have to go back to the Great Depression and see housing prices and real estate fall 50%. He goes, I'm telling you, I'm working with guys making $35,000 a year and they got $500,000 loans. It's not going to end well. People will do pretty much. This is what I was telling him. So I was trying to convince myself I was wrong, of course. I was dead wrong. I was at least right that I knew it was going to go down. Other people were saying, what bubble? What are you talking about? And he was absolutely right. You know, these people couldn't pay their mortgages. And then when the housing prices started to fall, there's an old saying, when the tide goes out, you can see who's swimming naked, right? Housing prices started to fall, their payments gone up, they just stopped making their payments, and the whole thing collapsed. But that doesn't mean these things should not exist. They do. They should. They just need to be well-regulated, and sounds like an advertisement, doesn't it? Anyway, by the way, you, dear United Staters, are proud owners of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. The United States government wound up owning these things. And they're very profitable, don't get me wrong. They're sending billions of dollars every 3 months to the Treasury. But do we really want the government in the business? Do we want them to be in business? Most people would say no, but nobody can agree on how the hell we extricate ourselves from these two things, because we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. You like that cliche? Like that thing? These things are helping people get mortgages and buy homes. So what do? Citizens, you need to educate yourself and talk to your elected representatives. And so this whole process is often called securitization, which is a fancy way of saying, look, we're packaging these things into securities, into bonds, into debt instruments, and then selling them and making them available to anybody who wants to earn interest and principal. It is not only done with mortgages. It has spread into other assets, such as bank loans, leases, credit cards, car loans, patents, stocks, and even artists. This was like late 80s. You heard of David Bowie, right? Passed away a few years ago. A very famous artist. He went to the investment community and said, look, I'm David Bowie, and I want to fund some projects, but I need some cash, right? So I want to sell bonds. And people go, what? Can you imagine an individual going, hey, I want to sell bonds. Who are you? Oh, I'm an artist. Look at what I've done. I sell plenty of records. The records were still around, but CDs were taken over. And they did it. It was a small issue by bond, $55 million. $55 million. And he paid them back. Then another, you ever hear of REM? REM, they're another group. They did it too, and they paid him back, so check it out. Type in Bowie bonds. Sometimes called collateralized bond implications, structured investment vehicles. So this process is useful. It is something that we should have in our economy, but it needs to be better regulated. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so that was the that they are associated with the treasury, but they're not, you know, not part of the treasury. And then muni bonds. Okay, muni bonds. We already took a look at some muni bonds, Poway bonds. Municipal bonds are very cool. Why? Because the income is tax exempt of the federal income tax code. Now, the IRS doesn't like it if you use tax free. Don't say they don't like that tax free. They'd rather you say tax exempt. Anyway, that's what they always say. They never use tax free. They always use tax exempt. So if you buy a municipal bond, doesn't matter where it is in the country, you buy a muni bond, you're not going to pay federal income tax on it. By the way, as we said, treasury bonds, you don't pay state income tax. Why? Because our Constitution says the feds can't tax the state and local governments. The state and local governments can't tax the feds. And if you, where is it? Oh, next slide. Okay, so it doesn't matter where it is. If Puerto Rico, Guam, territories of the United States are also included. Very popular with high net worth, high income taxpayers. And we'll see why when we get to the calculations in the next chapter. And some muni bonds are insured, which is certainly a desirable feature. Now, where is it? Did I say, is there something about this? Okay, we'll find, it's on another slide, I'm blanking now, but if you buy a muni bond in your state or in California, if you buy a California muni bond, not only do you not pay federal income tax, but also the state of California says, cool, you know, you don't have to pay state income tax on that. So it doesn't matter where it is in California. So Southwestern Community College bonds are very popular with the high income individuals. Now, types of muni bonds. General obligation bonds, GOES, general obligation bonds. They are backed by the full faith, credit, and taxing power of the issuer. That means that if the state of California puts that bond issue out, if they are short on cash, they've got to turn around and go back to the people and say, look, we've got to tax you more. And if they tried it, there was about 10, 12, you know, actually, I'm getting old. In the mid-2000s, San Diego was in deep trouble. They had made some really stupid maneuvers with the pension, and they blamed it on the unions. It wasn't the union's fault. It was the erected representatives. But anyway, the mayor was saying, well, we'll declare bankruptcy. That's what we'll do if the unions don't capitulate to our demands. What? He was just blowing smoke. Because as soon as he goes before the judge and says, Judge, city of San Diego is bankrupt, the judge is going to say, oh, yeah? I know it's hard to believe, but our cities here in this San Diego County are some of the least taxed cities in the country. You know, you go to other cities and they have their own income tax and they have a whole lot more in taxes. So it was just jokes. It wasn't going to happen. And in general, most people would consider general obligation bonds less risky than revenue bonds. That's the conventional wisdom. Because revenue bonds are muni bonds that require payment of principal and interest only if the sufficient revenue is generated by the issuer. So for example, you're a bridge authority and you're collecting tolls, the Coronado Bay Bridge. It doesn't collect tolls anymore, but when it was created, they collected tolls to pay off the bonds. And then when the bonds were paid off, they were supposed to take the toll away. They did if you were in a carpool. But they kept it for a few more years and then finally took it away to build up a maintenance fund. If you're a water authority and you're selling people water or whatever. And they're considered less desirable than general obligation bonds because what if the project fails? But listening to people who I think are a whole lot smarter than me, certainly they're making a whole lot more money than me, they love revenue bonds if the project is a very good project. They love revenue bonds more than they like the general obligation bonds because if the revenue is strong, if it's an entity that's going to make a whole lot of money, they like those better. So the conventional wisdom is that GOES are safer than revenue bonds, where these people who are very, very smart say, no, we like revenue bonds. And then the special tax bonds are muni bonds that are payable from the proceeds of a special tax. And we discussed these Poway, right? Same thing is true for the proposition. You see the signs, Proposition Z, Proposition R, around the, that's how we paid for the stadium and the wellness center, and now they're working on the performing arts center. The South Bay voters had to approve the tax, and whenever we go to the South Bay, they always say, yeah, Southwestern, we love you. Isn't that nice? Yes, Kathleen?
So, like, the extension of the 125, is that part of, like, was that paid for, like, a revenue bond?
I assume so. You know, I really don't know. What happened with that, that was an interesting case, and I don't know enough about it, but an Australian firm that builds four-pay toll roads all around the world bid on that. And in the contract was a provision that if it didn't make enough money, that SANDAG, the intergovernmental agency that does a lot of transportation projects here, would have to buy it. And I could have told them, they didn't ask me, but I could have told them, people will go 5 miles out of their way to get to 805. They're not going to take that 125. Now, what do you think? Do you agree with me? I used to ask students, how many students are going to use the 125 when it's built as opposed to going around? About half of them, less than half would say yes. The other half would say, no way. Because we Californians, we don't want to pay. We just don't want to pay. And so, and isn't that the case? Have you noticed that? That people will go, they'll go down to 805 and then go up. They're not going to take the 125.
I noticed though that people almost equally don't want to wait. And especially if you're like from Eastlake, you got some money.
But that's it. Yeah. So for some people, it wasn't a problem. But for the, but not everybody is going to use it. And it, sure enough, that's exactly what happened. They didn't make enough money, so SANDAG had to buy it from them. Now, I assume, I don't know. You can look it up. I assume that they sold bonds for that because, you know, you just don't have that kind of cash sitting around. But you know what? You know what? SANDAG gets most of their money for transportation is sales tax. We voted for sales tax and an increase of our sales tax over and over. Well, the last time we voted it down. Was it this last year? I don't remember. 2 years ago. We voted the sales an extra sales tax down for the transportation projects. Check it out. SANDAG. If you're so interested. Because municipal funding is a very, I think it's pretty interesting, although I like stocks a lot better. But municipal funding is a very interesting world unto itself, and there's a lot of money to be made. I remember these guys coming and selling our bonds. This guy, I swear, he paid somebody to put every hair in position. Yeah, I swear, hair is perfect in a $1,000 suit. And I'm looking at him saying, you don't impress me if that's what you think, buddy. And then they said, well, here, Mr. introduced me as Series 7. I'm a Series 7 certified stockbroker, and I teach them. They looked at me. What the hell are you doing here? You can make a whole lot more money outside. Yes, sir, I know you're right. They just looked down on us. I just felt, buddy, I wouldn't want to be in your position. Anyway, okay, what are the municipal bond tax advantages? How are we doing for time? Not bad. Free from taxable income, federal income taxes, and we're going to calculate the taxable equivalent yield in Chapter 10. If, as we said, purchased by investors in that municipality, they are also free from state and local taxes. So we have to do a calculation for federal and state tax exempt. California taxpayers do not pay federal income tax nor California income tax on the California municipal bonds. And it turns out the higher the tax bracket, the more these things are worth. And that's why when there was this big muckety-muck thing in the one of the governing board members saying, we need to advertise our bonds to the general public here in the South Bay so that they can participate in this grand scheme. And I'm thinking, well, I'm not even going to bond. No. Do people in San Ysidro buy muni bonds? You know, a few of them might. But no. This is Bonita, maybe, La Jolla, Rancho Santa Fe, up in Los Angeles, and very wealthy, as we'll see. And it turns out that capital gains, if you get any capital gains, those are not exempt. It's just the income that is exempt. So, how are we doing? Now, corporate bonds. Corporate bonds. And as we said before, there are two types. There are secured. Something is behind it. The company owns real estate or owns airplanes or railroad equipment. And then they go senior and junior, a pecking order. And then there is unsecured. And these are called debentures. But I have a hard time saying that word. I often say debentures, which is not correct. Debentures. They're just backed by the full faith and credit of the corporation. So what does that mean? If the company has all these railroad equipment and they go bankrupt, the bondholders have first dibs on those, right? If a company that is selling debentures, did I say that right? Debentures. Unsecured bonds, you just have to go after the company. You get in line with all the other creditors and say, okay, what can I get from them? And then some income bonds, corporate income bonds, are very similar to the revenue bonds that we talked about in the muni bonds. They're based on the revenue that this entity is creating. So they're only paid if that income is earned. And then zero coupons. Now, zero coupons are a little strange. First of all, I wish they would have changed the name, but they haven't. Some people call them stripped, which I think is cute. But so what's going on here? Do you remember the coupon rate? Nominal rate? That's what you're getting paid, right? And remember we used to clip the coupons? We don't do that anymore. Clip the coupons and send them off and they'd send us a check. Well, these bonds have no coupons. They don't pay any interest. Huh? Well, do you remember the savings bonds? You bought it $50 and 18 years later you get $100. It's the same idea. Instead of receiving interest in cash, the bonds simply accrue. That's the word they use. It's an accounting term. Don't be afraid by it. It means grow. In value until maturity. So, for example, if you had a 6.25% bond and it matured in 20 years, it would only cost you $300. So you give them $300. 20 years later, they're going to give you $1,000. You're getting 6.25%. In 10 years, that bond would now be worth $550. With me, you see how it's working? You're not getting any interest. Zero coupons. What are the disadvantages? Well, they're very sensitive to interest rate swings. So, because you're not getting interest, it's all speculation on whether or not you're going to get the principal back. But more importantly, if you hold it till maturity, you don't care. If you hold it until maturity, get your $1,000. Would you give that to him? He's walking away from it. It's okay. But get this. The IRS expects you to pay taxes on the accrued interest every year, even though you didn't receive it in cash. So it's phantom income. The bond is going up every year in value, but you're not getting any income. You're not getting any interest. But the IRS says you have to pay us taxes on that. You like that idea? No, put it in your IRA, put it in your Roth IRA, and then you don't have to worry, right? Because you're not paying income, you're not paying taxes on the income every year anyway. So that's why these are very popular in IRAs and other tax sheltered accounts. Plus, if you get a municipal zero coupon bond, is the interest taxable? No. So the IRS can't touch it. So that's why muni bonds, zeros, and zero coupon bonds going into your IRA are popular. Because then you don't have to worry about that phantom income. Oh, and then lastly, junk bonds. What is this? Junk. Which is a nasty word for non-investment grade. Right? We looked at the... Did we look at we did, didn't we? AAA, AA, yeah, right. So they're also called high yield bonds, speculative bonds, distressed bonds. These are issued primarily by corporations, but there are some muni junk bonds. These were reserved for bonds that were in serious danger of going into default. But in the 1980s, there was an entire industry of junk bonds that were issued by companies not large enough to issue bonds. They said, we want to issue bonds. So they were paying 17%. It's just insane, outrageous amount. Well, what was going on? There, you've seen the original Wall Street from the 1980s. It was based on the guy, Michael Milken and Ivan Boesky, two guys who were selling these junk bonds. But they weren't using the money to build the business. They were using the money to to do insider trading. And one of the companies was Vagabond Inns. Have you heard of them? Vagabond. They're based here in San Diego. You'll see these motels around the city, Vagabond Motels. They were paying 17% on their bonds. Very high risk, but also there's an opportunity for large capital gains if things go well. Most bond funds and most bonds tend to be counter-cyclical, inversely correlated. We'll see that when we get to chapter 11, to stocks. But junk bonds tend to move with the stock market, as we'll see why later on. Okay, and now foreign bonds. Now we shouldn't put these in here. Foreign bonds run the gambit of from the least riskiest to the riskiest. But the problem is you have to move your currency, as we talked with stocks. You have to move your currency into another currency, pesos, euros, whatever. And so for the vast majority of us, we would use a global bond fund. But there are some entities that dollar denominate their bonds. They take their currency and they move it into dollars, and then they have to pay back in dollars. And it's worked out for some. It has worked out to be a disaster for others, because what happens if their currency devalues versus the dollar? Now they have a huge problem. For example, if Mexico had issued dollar-denominated bonds before the Great Recession, when the peso was about 10 to a dollar, maybe they were paying 6%, right? 7%, 5%. And then now what's the peso?
Almost 20.
Now they're paying double. They have to pay double to pay off that interest, because now the pesos have to be moved into dollars, and they have to basically come up with almost twice as many pesos as they did. You understand the problem with that? It's not a problem for you, unless they default. Then it's a problem. So most people are going to use mutual funds, because there's just so much moving parts. And we discussed the currency fluctuations. If the dollar rises, what happens to your debt? Well, your assets outside the country? They fall. The dollar falls. Your assets become worth more. That's what you have to think about when you're doing this. But use a mutual fund. Okay, how are we doing? All right, up. Now, letter grades. We went through this. Let's go through it very quickly. Instead of, if you go look at your credit rating, it goes from 350 to 850. But that's not what they do in the world of bonds. They start at AAA, AA, BBB, BBB, CCC, CCC, and then D is default. But really, anything down here is pretty bad. So there's Standard & Poor's, Moody's, Fitch, Weiss. I used to think of them like idiot lights on your dashboard. Anybody motorheads in here? Any motorists who know about? I'm not that good about it. But 20, 30 years ago, when you saw the little red light, the oil light go on, what did you do? Just keep driving. It's too late. Your engine's going to see if you can get off the freeway. But now if you see the red light, what do? Pull over immediately, because the idiot lights are a whole lot better than they used to be. And that's the same thing happened here. They did not downgrade Enron and WorldCom in 2001 and 2 until they were practically in default. And the same thing happened in the 2008-2009 mortgage-backed bonds. They screwed up royally. They gave these liar loan mortgages, bonds, based on people telling, yeah, I'll make $100,000. No, he's not making 30. They gave these things AAA ratings, sold them all around the world, and then what happened is literally the bond market froze. The bond market froze. Doesn't trade as much as the stock market to begin with, but nobody would buy bonds. The demand just disappeared. And so you didn't even know how to price the darn things. There's nobody buying them. So it was very serious. And what did they say? We're sorry. You're an idiot. And they're still doing it. What can they do? What can you do? And you can't sue them, by the way. Congress says, no, you can't sue them. They're special. They're rating agencies. So here they are. AAA is the highest grade, the gilt edge. Double A. We saw Southwestern is double A, right? Did we see Southwestern double A? Not double A minus. Then BBB. And then here starts non-investment grades, poor quality, poor is the default. And then what they do is they, oops, wrong way. Then what they do is they add a plus sign or a minus sign. So there's triple A, double A, plus, that's where the United States government is now. Double A minus, there's Southwestern. A plus, A minus, B. I mean, you go to the store and you see eggs. Grade BB or grade A. What the hell does it mean? I don't know. And this is the same thing as true here. I don't know what it, you know, I don't know how they have their own reasoning for this, but I think it's kind of silly. What do you think? Do you like it? That's what you got to deal with. All right, and so we're almost done. Bond trading. Bond trading is very difficult for retail investors. Why? Because, as we said, bonds don't trade as much. People buy their bonds, they hold on to them, they collect their interest, and then they get the principal back. So, and bond trading is normally in $25,000, $50,000, $100,000 increments. Do you remember $25,000 minimum? And if you are not very big, you're not going to get treated well. You walk into a bond trading place and say, I have $1,000, can I buy a bond? Get out of here. So often there's a way to trade over the counter. What does that mean? I mean directly from the individuals. Don't go through the brokerage firms. And I haven't seen it in years because it's probably all electronic now. But there was a newspaper called The Bond Buyer where people would put in their buy and sell requests and you go right to that person, right to that entity that held the bond. But as we saw with TreasuryDirect.gov, there's an exception. You have $1,000, you get to buy a $1,000 bond. And as we saw the quotes, you got to move the decimal point one over to the right. So if you see 97.25, it really means 97.25%, but most all bonds are $1,000 increments. So why don't they just put 972.50? Oh, remember, some bonds are $5,000 and some bonds are $10,000. Screwball. Okay. Oh, and by the way, did I show you FINRA? Did I show you FINRA? I don't think I did. I'll show you. You're going to do some bond quotes. We use FINRA, but they really use Morningstar. But the weird thing is, on Morningstar's website, there's no bond quotes. Figure that out. So FINRA, you go to FINRA, Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, you do bond quotes. They're using Morningstar, but you can't do them on Morningstar. So that's chapter 9. Question, am I going too fast? Yes, I'm sorry, Matthew. Yeah, these guys are going to pay more than these guys.
Yeah.
In general.
More risk,
right, exactly. And that risk versus return. Risk versus return. It goes back to that. But still, the only ones that really you have to worry about down here, because most of these entities, except when there's a huge recession and we have lots of people going into bankruptcy, it wasn't as bad as people thought it was, but literally bonds just dried up, bond trying. And that's dangerous. I mean, it's a silly question, but what do you think is more important, the stock market or the bond market? Which market? Stocks or bonds? Bonds. Bonds are far more important for the economy because if you're an entity and you can't get from point A to point B, you can't get the funding you need, and we're not talking about going to the bank and getting a big loan. We're talking about getting a $900 billion loan if you're the federal government or $100. The first one was $190 million. I mean, that's a lot of money. But in the bond world, that's typical. That's typical. So if you can't get your cash to get from point A to point B, then things don't get happen. Stadiums don't get built. Water projects, the like. You understand? So the credit markets, as they're called, the bond markets, are far more important than the stock market, which is, gets all the attention, and it's a great way to build wealth, but it's the credit markets that are more important. But it's a silly question. It's really a silly question. Both are important, yeah.
So would you say that bond markets are more, integral to, infrastructure, whereas stock markets are kind of, frivolous?
Well, I wouldn't use the first part. Yes, I wouldn't use the word frivolous, but I think It's a silly question. I shouldn't even have said it. But yeah, the bond market is more integral to the economy. If entities such as corporations, municipalities, the federal government cannot borrow money on a large scale, then we've got trouble. We've got problems. We can't do what we need to do. We can't build the roads. We can't build the hospitals, the schools, the water projects, the interstate highway system. We just can't do these things without the funding, and that's where the bond market gets. But it's a silly question because the stock market is not frivolous. Obviously, it's the exciting part. It's the way to really build wealth, in my humble opinion. Okay, so now let's go take a look at. I showed you Ford and Poway, right? I did. Did I show you the FINRA? I did. Okay, cool. Okay, so let's. This is where you're gonna do your searches. Remember, if you choose muni, or when you choose muni, make sure you choose the state, California in our case. Or you can look at some other stuff. So now we're ready to do the exciting part. Look at that, almost 20%. You guys are so good. We're ready to do the exciting part, which isn't really that exciting, but it's more exciting than Chapter 9, and that is bond pricing, yields, and valuation. Bond calculations turn out to be actually a little trickier, in my humble opinion, than the stock calculations, but not that tricky. Okay, so test these out. Okay. Two, because Matthew's going to get one from the guys in the back. And then here's five. Yeah, okay. Extras? I think I passed out too many. Okay. Oh, you got it there? And then you need it. Pass that back, please. Okay. Okay, so Joshua here. No, Nicholas is here. Thank you. Extras. Don't go away. Mr. Mata. Oh, wait, did I give you yours? I think I did. The Nicholas. Where is he? Pass this back to Nicholas, please. I'd like to give you back your work as soon as possible. Nicholas, Guillermo, did I give you the exam back? Oh, here it is. Yeah, here it is. Here it is. And then the spreadsheet's right there. Spreadsheet's right on the... Right there. Take a look at the spreadsheet. Okay! Now, here are the calculations. They're not that hard. They're a little tricky. But as you've probably have figured out now, what's the most important thing with a bond when you're looking at it? What's it going to pay us? Bond yield is one of the most important factors in bond valuation. What is the bond paying us? Because over the long sweep of time, the income is what you receive from investing in bonds. Although there are sometimes opportunities for capital gains and sometimes opportunities for capital losses when we invest in bonds. But when the bond is redeemed, doesn't matter what you paid for it, you're only going to get $1,000 back. And given that most bonds repay their principal without incident, they pay their interest, they pay their principal, the valuations calculated using bonds tend to be very predictable. The unpredictable factor in bond evaluation is the future direction of interest rates. Can anybody determine the future direction of interest rates? No. There are people who are paid tremendous sums of money to incorrectly predict interest rates. And you can be one of them. And you can make all kinds of stupid and ridiculous projections, and people will pay you gobs of money, and when you're wrong, you say, oh, because of this. But next time I'll be right and pay me more money. Right. But if you plan to hold on to your bonds for the long term until you get your money back, then you don't care. The future rate of interest rates is not important to you. You are mostly interested in the income, not generally affected by the direction of interest rates, since you have no intentions of selling your bonds. If you have to sell your bonds, you might be in trouble. I mean, something forces you. I got to sell my investments. I got to raise some cash. Then you might get in trouble. But as I said, you are only concerned if you are forced or if you intend to sell your bonds before they mature. Now, we danced around this a little bit. Is this the better one? Yeah, that's the better one. There are three different yields There's the coupon yield, coupon rate, nominal yield, nominal rate. They all mean the same thing. Nominal rate, nominal yield, coupon yield. That's the stated. Another word is stated interest. That's the interest that's sitting on the bond indenture, sitting on the bond document. But we have to remember that bond prices go up and down. So there are two others that are very important. The current yield, or the current rate, and yield and rate must mean the same thing. And then the yield to maturity. And along with the yield to maturity, we also often calculate the yield to call if we believe that there's a pretty darn good chance that the bond is going to be called away from us. In the muni bond world, we also have to look at what's called the taxable equivalent yield. The taxable equivalent yield. I wish I had more board. And the double tax free, double tax exempt equivalent yield. Because it doesn't help us to take a look at the muni bond yield unless we've done this calculation, because we can't compare apples to apples. And so the calculations are really not that difficult. Let's take a look at nominal yield. So I gave you chapter 10, and there are going to be some worksheets in chapter 10, and they're going to be on the exam, and they're going to be on the assignment. So let's learn how to do them now. This is easy. If I ask you what's the nominal rate or coupon rate on an 8% bond, what do you say? It's just 8%. It's like, what's your name, Bob? Okay, so what's the nominal rate on a 7% bond? What's the nominal rate on a 3% bond? 1%. This is tricky. $10. 10%? $100. So be careful. Some people go, 1%, oh, it's $100. No, 10% is $100. Because bonds in this class will always be $1,000 par value. So nominal yield, 8% of $1,000, $80. Piece of cake. Okay, we know that. Don't put 8 cents. Because then if you do, you're not going to get the rate, plus you get a sapapo. Okay, so how are we doing here? Up. But the nominal yield is not as important as the current yield or the yield to maturity. And then the yield to call, if we believe, it's basically the same as yield to maturity. If we believe that the bond is going to be called away from us, we're assuming it's going to be called away from us, we'll do the yield to call. So the current rate is what we're getting paid right now. We look at the market price. Whereas the yield to maturity is what we will get if we hold it to maturity, if we hold it till we get our $1,000 back. And then the yield to call is basically the same thing, but we assume it's going to be called away from us. So here's the formula, and it's not that difficult. You take the annual, wrong one. Annual interest, annual, do I know what I'm doing now? Okay, divided by the market price. Very simple. So let's say we have an 8% bond, but it's selling for $800. It's a discount bond. We take the annual interest. So what's the annual interest on an 8% bond? Everyone should say $80. What's the annual interest on an 8% bond? What's the annual interest on a 3% bond? What's the annual interest on a 1% bond? What's the annual interest on a 10% bond? It's the tricky one right there. It's the tricky one. Okay, so $80. But what was the market price? $800. This is a discount bond. So what is it paying us currently? $80 divided by, get your calculators out. $80 divided by, you already see it there. But that's 10%. So this bond is paying us 10% currently. Why? We only had to pay $800 for it. But it's paying us $80 of interest every year. Hence, it's a discount bond and paying us more than the current rate. Does that make sense? Yes? Nod your head yes or no? It's not. I don't think it's that hard, but some people kind of go, why would it? What tends to get people upset is, why would a bond be selling for less than $800? Well, as we saw, if people were afraid that the bond company or municipality was not going to make their interest payments, they'll dump it, they'll sell it for whatever price they have. Or if interest rates have risen, what happens to bond prices? They fall, right? It's a seesaw. So in this case, interest. Let's assume that the bond is not in default, danger of being in default. Interest rates have risen. Now, what happens if the bond is selling at a premium? So here, we're still getting $80 because that is fixed. That's what we call bonds fixed. And stated rate, the interest, the nominal rate, the nominal coupon rate, those are all fixed. But this time, it's a premium bond. It's selling for $1,200. We're still getting $80. That's fixed, divided by $1,200. And what's the interest rate now? Tough question, folks. Basically 6.6 2/3, right? 0.0. And if you just leave it like this, you know, I don't care. The calculator will eventually do that. But we would normally see something like that. Usually you see either 3 or 4 digits of accuracy. 2 digits to the right of the decimal point. So that's 3. Here's 3. Anybody take chemistry? That's 3 digits of accuracy. That's 4 digits of accuracy. Please don't round. Don't round up. It's not that it's wrong. Some people will round up to 7%. Is that wrong? Well, technically, no, it's not wrong. But that means anything between 6.5% and 7.49%, which is a big difference in the bond world. So please don't round to the nearest death. Maybe 2 digits of accuracy, but no. Use at least 3 digits of accuracy just because everybody else does and they'll snicker and guffaw at you if you don't. Okay, so we paid $1,200 for this bond. We're only getting $80, so currently it's paying us 6.67%. Now, here comes the yield to maturity. The yield to maturity takes into account the price appreciation of the bond, if the bond is selling at a discount, or the price depreciation of the bond if the bond is selling at a premium. Because you bought it at 800, what are you going to get back when it matures? It's a $1,000 bond, what are you going to get back? What's your name, Bob? $1,000. You bought it at 800, you're going to get $1,000 back. You bought it at 1200, how much are you going to get back?
$1,000.
Everyone, you're not saying. You may think I'm crazy, maybe you're right. But if you say it, actually you learn faster. It's a $1,200 bond. What are you going to get back when it matures?
$1,200.
No, you're not going to get $1,200. What did I say?
$1,200.
No, you're going to get $1,000. You're always going to get $1,000 back when it matures. You're always going to get the par value. Now, as we said, some bonds are $5,000, $10,000. But in this class, we will all, and most bonds are $1,000. We will always use $1,000. So, yes?
So why would you ever buy a bond at a premium?
Because other bonds are paying the same damn thing. You look at the interest rate that these new bonds are giving you and the interest rate that the old bonds are giving you. So you say, well, what the hell? But yeah, you're looking for the interest. But I'm with you. If I'm going to buy bonds, because I'm cheap, I want to buy them at a discount. Because that means you're buying them when interest rates are high. Right? And that's what we get from bonds over the long sweep of time. We get our interest. But if you're just looking at the interest and you're saying, well, this bond, new bond's paying me 4%, it's selling for $1,000, and this bond's paying me 4% yield to maturity, current yield, even though it's paying far more, I had to pay more for it. You know, I guess you don't care. You don't care. But I do. I don't think bonds are a good deal right now. But stocks are pretty high, too. And real estate's starting to look interesting. Attractive. Because what's happening? Do you think we're having a... Well, hang on a minute. We probably won't get to it today, but there's something going on in the bond market. The bond market is the place to watch, folks. Stock market gets all the attention, but the bond market is where you want to watch. Now, for real estate, yeah, because what's happening?
It's slow.
Yeah, the market for real estate is slow, and so housing prices are starting to
go down.
Well, are they going down yet?
A little bit.
A little bit? Okay.
They're staying longer.
Right, exactly. Houses are staying on the market longer. Prices are softening, they say. I like that word. They're softening. And it's just, I don't know, I wish Zillow would extend their time horizon. But in 2000, see, this is what happened. So 2000, you just started the market. This is year 2000. Skyrocket. I mean, housing prices went in two directions, up and way, way up, until about 2007. And then they did this. 2007, they just sort of, because if you had taken calculus, you heard of the first derivative, the second derivative? Yeah. They were looking at the second derivative, right? So even though prices were still going up, they slowed down. And in 2007, they hit acceleration zero, right? And so, on the velocity zero. And now people say, oh, cool. They're taking housing prices are taking a breather. What happened? Plummeted. And so I'm thinking, I don't know, that's why they call it the future. But we're not there yet. Prices are still going up a little bit, at least last time I checked. But I think I don't think it's going to be anywhere near as bad as 2008 and 2009. But then I didn't think 2008 and 2009 was going to be that bad. So don't listen to me. But I'm thinking there's going to be some deals in real estate coming soon. Okay. So now, and we'll get to real estate at the end of the semester. So there are two primary methods. The one that we're going to look at later on, the bond pricing formula, which is more accurate, but difficult to do manually. That's why there's spreadsheets. And then the approximation formula. And this is the one they're going to ask you to do on the Series 7. At least that's what they asked me to do, but that was 20 years ago. I assume they still ask you to do that. And it looks scary, but it really isn't. It's basically the same formula. We take the annual dollar amount, but instead of dividing it by the market value, we divide it by the average of the par value and the market value. Because we paid this much, we're going to get this much. So let's take the average of the two instead of just dividing it by the market value as we did with the current yield. And then we're going to add this bad boy here, which scares people. But really, it's very straightforward once it's explained, in my humble opinion. How much are you going to get? How much are you going to get?
$1,000.
I haven't drilled this into your brain yet. What are you going to get when the bond matures?
$1,000.
And we're going to subtract that from the market value. How much do we have to pay for it? And then we're going to divide by the number of years to maturity. And what this is going to tell us is, look, every year we're going to add a little bit more or subtract a little bit more, depending on whether it's a discount bond. We'll add a little bit more. It'll go from 800 to 1,000. Or whether it's a premium bond, then we're going to subtract a little bit every year because it's going to go from 1,200 down to 1,000. And how many years is it going to take to do that? And so let's do the formula. I know it looks scary, but it's not. If this is an 8% bond, how much interest are we going to get? Annual interest on an 8% bond?
$80.
And then I like to do the bottom first. Doesn't matter. If it's selling for $800, 1,000 plus 800 is 1,800 divided by 2. 900, right? You can look at it. Some of you can do it in your head, right? Middle of those. And then 1,000 minus 800 is $200 divided by 10 is $20. So what are we doing? Every year we're adding $20 to our annual interest as the price goes from 800 to 820 and 840 and 860 until finally it hits 1,000 at the end. So 80 plus 20 is $100 divided by 900 is 11.2%. So what does that mean? If we hold the bond, even though it's paying us 10% now, if we hold the bond until maturity, we're actually going to get 11.1% because we're going to get that appreciation from 800 to 1,000. Make sense? That's the yield to maturity. And on a discount bond, it's going to be higher than the current yield. Now, what happens when it's a premium bond? The same thing in reverse. What's the average of 1,000 plus 1,200? What's in between 1,000 and 1,200? Some of you could do it. 1,100, right? 1,100, yeah. Okay, now, you calculate. That's why I use calculator. Okay, now, what do we do? 1,000 minus 1,200.
Negative.
Oh, negative numbers. You're going to freak out over negative numbers? No. Negative 200 divided by 10. negative 20. So every year we're going to subtract 20 bucks. 80 plus a negative 20 is 60. 60 divided by the 1,100 gives us only 5.45%. So even though it was paying us currently 6.67%, if we hold it to maturity, we're only going to get 5.45%. Cool? Make sense? Okay, cool. Wait a minute. Now, this goes over what we just described. The current yield on our 8% discount bond, selling it at 800, was 10%. But the yield to maturity was 11.1%. And the current yield on our 8% premium bond was 6.67%, but the yield to maturity was 5.45%. How is that possible? What's going on? Well, it's actually very straightforward. The discount bond was purchased at 800, but will be redeemed at 1,000. The premium bond was purchased at 1,200, but it's going to be redeemed at 1,000. So the yield to maturity calculation takes into account the bond appreciation if it's a discount bond, or the bond depreciation if it's a premium bond. Okay, cool. All right, so now yield to call. Okay, so let me use this guy. Mute. So let's now take out worksheet number one, and let's do a few. Not bad. We'll finish up these counts, hopefully. Extra packet? Yeah, I got extras. A lot of people don't show up anymore, but I make the copies just in case they do. Yeah, you don't have that? Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Kathleen. Okay, so page number three, worksheet number one. A bond that pays 9%, this is one, 9% bond is currently priced at $1,200. What is the nominal interest rate? Well, you did the current interest rate. You're way ahead of me. What's the nominal interest rate? What's the coupon rate? What's the nominal interest rate on a 9% bond? Everyone should say 9. Annual interest is $90. This is where people get confused. But what's the coupon rate on a 9% bond? Everyone should say 9%. Like, what's your name, Bob? Okay. Now, what's the annual interest, Kathleen? $90. So the annual interest is $90. And Adriano is way ahead of us. He took the $90 annual interest divided by the $1,200 of market value, and how much are we getting currently? What's our current interest rate? What was it, Adriano? 7.5%. You can leave it as the calculator shows you, but if you do change it to a percentage, please do it right. And if you're having trouble with percentages, come see me. Go to the Academic Success Center. Ask them about percentages and decimal places. Cool? So the first answer is 9%. What's the nominal rate? What's the coupon rate? 9%. Now, number two is the same bond, right? This 9% bond is a 20-year bond. So now we know how many years we have until maturity. It has, it's not the same. It's a different one. It has a selling price of $1,100. So the market price is $1,100. And then the call price, we'll worry about that later. We'll do that after we do yield to call. So right for now, all we need to know is the annual, the interest rate, the nominal interest rate, the coupon rate, which gives us the annual interest, the years to maturity, and what the market price is. And so here's the formula. Annual interest divided by the par value and the market price divided by 2. So that's just the average. That's all it's doing. It's just calculating the average between the two. And then we're going to add to that the par value minus the market price, and then divide that by the number of years until maturity. All right, piece of cake. So now let's start plugging in some numbers here. Okay, Joshua, did I give you your exam back?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay. So what's the annual interest? On a 9% bond?
$90.
Don't put 9 cents. Okay, what's the par value always?
1,000.
1,000. What's the market value?
1,110.
1,110? Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. 1,110. I made a trick here. 1,110. Okay. So now, what's the average of 1,000 and 1,110? So 1,000 plus 1,110 is $2,110 divided by 2. 1,150? No. 1,155. Come on, use your calculator. I don't trust myself. I make all kinds of mistakes. I was a math major, believe it or not, in my undergraduate years. And I would make all... This is before calculators. I mean, calculators were out, but they were $500, and none of us had one. And that was a lot of money then. So we weren't required to use a calculator. But I made all kinds of mistakes. And my profs thought it was funny. I didn't think it was funny. But they thought it was funny. They would say, would you work on your arithmetic? I'm sorry. Okay, so now, question. No, this is just the two here. The reason we're dividing by two is because we're just finding the average. How do you find the average of two numbers? You add them and then divide by two. So 6 plus 8 is 14 divided by 2, and the average is 7. That's the reason. It has nothing to do with the years. That's just the average. Okay, now here comes the tricky part. What's the par value minus the market price? Negative 110. Negative numbers? Does it scare you? Laura's not scared. And then we divide by how many years we have until the bond matures. So 110 divided by 20? Negative, right? Negative 5.5. And so you take a plus 90 plus a minus negative 5.5. Come on, do it. 90 plus a negative or minus 5.5? 84.5. $84.50. Questions, thoughts, ideas, comments, criticisms, suggestions? Josh was looking at it like,
yeah. I thought we were adding the two.
Well, yeah, but you're adding a negative number.
Well, because there's two.
You see? 1,000.
Yeah, 1,000. I thought we were adding the par value and the market value.
So that was down here. That was down here. This, I know, that confuses people. The one we use. Why do you use a plus sign here and a minus sign there? Because here, we're calculating the average. And that's how you calculate the average. You add the two numbers and you divide by two. That's all. And they have nothing to do with one another. This one, we're taking the par value minus the market value because we want to determine how it's going to get to that. Wherever it's starting. If it's starting at 800, it's going to make its way to 1,000. If it's starting at 1,200, it's going to make its way to 1,000. So if it's a discount bond, this will be positive. If it's a premium bond, that's going to be negative. It's really that simple. Make sense? Cool? Yes?
So, at the bottom, you added the 1,000 and 1,110, and it gave you 2,110 divided by 2.
Well, see, that's why you guys got the calculator. What is it? 1,055?
Yeah.
Okay. See, you got to tell me. I don't have the calculator. I make all kinds of... I can't do... I don't even try to do stuff in my head. That's why they have calculators. And you go to the 99-cent store, you can buy 5 of them. For the price of one $5 coffee, you can have 5 calculators. And you paid $1.47 for that one, right?
$2.
Okay. It's a Casio. Yes.
Mine, I
shouldn't use parentheses. Minus 5.5. Because it's... Do it. What's 1,000 minus 1,110?
Negative
110. Divide that by 20. No, it's not 55. That's if you divide it by 2. Negative 5.5. So now, Joshua, we add the plus 90 to a negative 5.5, and we get...
Right,
84.
No, yeah, I'm following it now. It's just
okay. I know. Why is it a plus sign here? Why is it a negative sign here? Okay, so what's the result? 0.0094. So a little over 8%. You could do that, or you could do that. That's better. Well, what's if 90, a plus 90 plus a minus, which means you subtract, 5.5. So 90 minus 5.5. It's the arithmetic. It's a little tricky. Okay? Now, the yield to call is basically the same damn thing. The yield to call is the exact same formula. We just use a few different numbers, which I'll show you in a minute, using the magic of the device here. Okay? Come on. Okay, yield to call. The yield to call takes into account the possibility of the bond being called. You would only use this on premium price bonds because a bond issuer would never call on a discount bond. That means they'd be paying higher interest rates. They're not going to do it. It would only be on premium bonds. And again, we'll take a look at the internal rate of return in the next chapter. Or use the exact same approximation formula. But what we do is we change the par value to the call value, and we change the number of years to maturity to the number of years of call. So we're just using a couple of different numbers. That's all. So here, if that same 8% bond, price of $1,200, had a call price of $1,080, that means they have to pay back $1,080, and it's callable in 5 years, then you would replace the par value with the call value, and replace the number of years of maturity with the number of years until call. So if we go back to, we won't do this, unless you want to do it. You want to do this one, or let's do the one on the worksheet? Let's do the one on the worksheet. So it's mute. And so I'm going to use a different color instead of writing the whole damn thing, but I think it saves time. Plus, it also shows you what we're doing. It's pretty straightforward. This bond, what is it? It's callable in 10 years or 5 years?
5 years
callable. And what was the call price?
$1,050.
So that means they have to pay us back $1,050. So all I'm going to do here is instead of using the par value, I'm going to use the call value. And instead of using the number of years to maturity, I'm going to use the number of years to call. So here I use 20 because that's when the bond matures. And here I use 5 because we're assuming in 5 years the entity, the municipality, the corporation is going to say, give us back our bonds. Here's your 1,000 or 1,050. Yes?
What we did right now with
yield to call. It's the same formula except we replace this par value with the call value. And we replace the number of years to maturity with the number of years until call. It's the exact same formula. So let's do it again here. What's the annual interest rate on a 9% bond? $90. Okay. And the bottom, is it the par value? No, it's the call value plus the market price of 1110 divided by 2. So that's a little tricky. I'm not going to try to do it in my head. You guys do it. You got the calculator. 1080 is the answer? 1080? Okay, so what we do is it's like 2060? 2160. Yeah, she's right. 1080. Okay, good. Now, instead of using the par value up here, we're going to use the call value minus the market price divided by not the years of maturity, but the years to call. And so what's that? That's negative 60? No. Negative 60 divided by 5 is negative 12. So a $90 plus a negative 12 gives us $78 divided by the 1080. And what is our rate of return?
7.22%.
So if they called away from us, in 5 years, we're going to get less than if they let us hold it to maturity. Why? Because they've basically taken away they've taken away our ability to make money off the bond. Is that pretty straightforward? Okay, there's a worksheet number 2, and there's a worksheet number 3, and then there's a assignment, and they're going to be on the exam for bonds. All right, so what are we doing next? Oh, right, mute. All right, now, the yield to call was less than the yield to maturity. And this is typical because the bonds are called away. We would have less time to take advantage of the oversized interest payments. And we get, but sometimes it depends. You know, if they have to pay us 1080 or something like that, we might actually make out a little better. Yeah.
What was the answer?
What was the answer? It was 7.22. Well, I can't see it very well. 7.22. All right. Now, how you doing? Got a few more minutes. Want to do taxable equivalent bonds? There, crack, stretch. Okay. Taxable equivalent yields for muni bonds, tax-exempt, tax-free. Since muni bonds are free from federal taxes, in order to effectively compare muni bonds to other bonds, you need to compute the taxable equivalent yield. So if it's a bond not in your state, you use the very simple federal tax equivalent yield. If it's a muni bond in your state, then you have to use a little trickier but not that much trickier formula. So, for example, we buy a bond that's not in California. The taxable equivalent yield is equal to the muni yield, the coupon rate, the stated interest, the nominal rate, divided by 1 minus your marginal federal tax bracket. Does this look familiar for some of you? From Business 121. So let's say you go out there and buy a 6% muni bond. And you're in the 25% tax bracket. That's 6% divided by 1 minus 0.25. So what is that? Tough question, folks. 6% divided by 1 minus 0.25. Everyone says, get your calculators, come on. 0.75, right? And that is, you can read it if you want to read it. I'd rather you do it. 0.08. So what does that mean? That means you, if you're buying this 6% muni bond and you're in the 25% tax bracket, you got to go out and find a corporate bond that's fully taxable that pays you 8%. Huh? Well, wait a minute, how much interest does a 6% bond pay? Annual interest, $60. How much interest does an 8% bond pay? $80. Wouldn't you rather have $80 than $60? Yeah, right. The tax man cometh. Right? So what happens? You get that $80, what does the IRS say? How much do you owe? 25%. So how much you gotta pay to the feds? $20, what are you left with? $60. So here we cannot compare a corporate bond or a treasury bond. We cannot compare, because the treasury, the IRS does tax you on treasury in interest. We cannot compare an interest rate from a muni bond with an interest rate from a corporate bond until we've done this calculation. We must do the taxable equivalent yield. Yes?
Is that a California-only rule, or
I don't know if every state does this, but New York, Illinois, the high-tax states, if you buy muni bonds in their state, you don't pay income tax on those. I assume all states do it, but I'm not sure. I don't want to give you bad data, but I'm pretty sure most of the states, if not all, do it.
If you're in California and you bought an Arizona muni bond, then that doesn't.
No, they damelo. California would want you to pay interest on the Arizona bond because the states can tax one another. The states are not they can tax one another. The spreadsheets hanging around somewhere. Okay, cool. I know you give me the 5-minute rule. Okay. Now let's quick take a look at the double tax rate. As Kathleen said, it's pretty true. I mean, no matter where you go, if you're in a high tax state, some states don't have an income tax. Some states don't have it, but many of the more liberal blue states. I love politics. Can you believe that there's a guy running for president who's gay? Can you believe that? I mean, it's so hard to believe. The first gay rights or whatever, homosexual rights protest was in 1966, and the people wore bags on their heads. They were so frightened. They protested, because that's your First Amendment right, in Washington, D.C., with bags over their heads. That's how frightened they were. And now we got a guy who's openly gay.
I'm sure he'd be fine from the first game.
Well, exactly. If you look at it's like 5 to 10% of the population. So how many presidents have been? 45?
They say Lincoln was almost.
Whatever. None of my business. But still, it just amazes me. I never thought I'd see a person of color, a woman, certainly not homosexual, in the White House. I was so surprised. I kept telling my wife, this is 2000. What?
Transsexual.
A robot, eventually. Cyborg. An animal, you know. I know a dog would do better than Trump. I know that. But in 2006 and 7, I told my wife, I said, no, they're going to kill him. Someone's going to kill Obama. And they kept him alive the whole damn time. So salute us to the Secret Service. So when we come back, we'll do the exact same calculation, but we'll do it for the double tax rate. Okay? And then we'll look at something that will look really familiar and show you that bonds are kind of exciting, but not really. Okay. Cool. Are you getting an education? Yes. Are bonds exciting?
Yep.
No. Oh, they are? Okay, cool. Some people like bonds. Hey, and if you get into the bond world, I'm telling you, those bond investors are bank. They make a lot of money. You'll do well.